All right, welcome to Season 2, Episode 37, which is also Episode 69 of the Retro Game Club podcast. I am Rob, and with me is someone who did not buy something for $156,000, Hugh.
That's right, yeah. Not even my house. Well, actually, I guess my house was more than that, because I bought it during the bubble, but...
Oh, nice.
Not sure it is now. Yeah, I will say, in my defense, I had a townhouse that I sold at the peak of the housing bubble to buy the house I'm currently in. So, I'm not underwater or anything, but my house is not worth anywhere near what I paid for it. But on the flip side, whoever bought the townhouse for me is also in a bad situation now.
Well, maybe the depreciation will be the same as the news article I'm talking about.
Yeah, maybe. Oh, man. So, what have you been up to?
Well, not too much. This, you know, never-ending work projects, I'm sure. Our listeners are excited for me to eventually stop talking about, but started playing Age of Calamity. I said I probably wouldn't do any modern games, and then the next day that happened to come in the mail. And it took me a while to get into. That's the Breath of the Wild prequel. And
yeah, kind of. Right? They call it that to get you to buy it. It's not a Breath of the Wild game, really.
No,
I played the demo.
No. It's just some story in there, and it took me a few levels to get the controls down, but now that I do, I like it. I like that kind of button masher game, but there's definitely some skill involved, and yeah, we'll see how long it keeps my attention, but that's really about it. What have you been up to?
Not a lot. I saw the Midwest Gaming Classic announced their 2021 dates, which are now in November. So also off season, you know, obviously booking a conference center outside of the summer months is going to be cheaper. And I guess they're gambling that by November, we will be through with this thing, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's good. I think that's a good gamble. But they also picked another month that it'll probably snow really heavily on that day.
It could, yeah. Milwaukee can snow in the first... It's the first week in November. And... I mean, I can tell you, like, I'm 45 minutes or an hour south of Milwaukee, whatever. And we've had snow. Last year, we had, like, literally 10 inches of snow on Halloween.
Yeah, same here.
Right, but then it melted the next day. So Milwaukee, first week of November, probably is just going to be 40 degrees. But blizzard is possible, too. They could do three shows in a row of blizzard. Yeah,
exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But as of right now, I'm planning to go. I mean, again, assuming like there's some kind of vaccine for this thing and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'll wait for another year, I guess.
Well, I buy a ticket every year. I've never gone because it's snow.
But luckily, your 2020 ticket that you didn't use is now a lifetime ticket.
Oh, yeah. Good.
They said they would honor those forever. So
that's cool.
That's what I'm planning to do.
That is cool.
Plan to use it. I mean, I'll buy other merch because they need to make their money, of course. So, you know, I'll buy plenty of merch from them, but it's the ticket I'm going to reuse. And then I've been looking a little bit at Black Friday sales. I'm not going to go to any stores. But I did save. Actually, this is my wife's idea, was scanning and saving the Bass Pro Shop ad for 2020. Because it has this whole thing about their Santa protocols. It's like two pages of Santa protocols. Because, you know, Bass Pro Shop, for people who aren't familiar with it, it's a outdoor store. They sell hunting and camping gear. But they do a really big Santa display at all of their stores. Like, they carve out the section with... It's really huge. When my kids were little and still Santa-appropriate age, that was kind of the best place to go, was Bass Pro Shop. I'm not sure I've ever purchased anything from Bass Pro Shop. I think there's a good chance I never have. But now it's like, it's just so funny reading because it's like temperature check and then the Santa sanitization squad will, I don't know what they do to you, but they do something. And then you're on a bench and Santa is behind a sheet of plexiglass.
Wow.
And yeah, one day archaeologists are going to look back on that.
I mean, you can really probably get the same experience if you just go visit a drunk Santa at jail and just talk to him through the glass.
Yeah. Absolutely, 100%. Yes. And you don't have to deal with crowds either then. Yeah. So I'm not going to any stores on Black Friday, but a lot of the online stores are having sales. And I just saw one announced today that's pretty cool. So Sega is doing a Black Friday sale on the Switch store. Maybe they have a comparable one on PlayStation Store. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But most of their games, basically everything with Sega Ages in the name, is like 40% off.
Okay.
And stuff like Sega Genesis Classics is 50% off.
That's great.
Yeah, I might pick up a couple games here. There are a few that are... I was sort of debating whether to get the Sega Ages Phantasy Star, because I am a big Phantasy Star fan. Mm-hmm. I just don't know if I would ever do a playthrough of the original Phantasy Star again.
Now, that's turn-based,
you know, you have a giant backlog, right?
Phantasy Star...
It's a turn-based RPG.
Okay, so I would not like it.
You would not like Phantasy Star, no. A good one, though, Herzog's Y is like 40% off, and that game is really awesome.
Yeah, I have that on a collection. I think I have that on the Sega Classics on Switch. I think it's on that.
It's not on Sega Classics.
Oh, man.
It might be on the Sega Genesis Mini. I have to check. That's another thing I bought when it was like 50% off, and I've never even taken it out of the box, so I can't tell you what's on it.
Yeah, me too.
But yeah, it's about that's about it. Why don't we dive into some news and stuff?
This first one, I feel like we've had before, but I don't... The date says we
No, didn't. This is a follow... It's a follow-up to an article we talked about like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Did you post this one?
Yes, I did. Yeah. So this is from the Nerdly Pleasures blog. Mm. And a couple episodes ago, we talked about their write-up on like getting into the Apple II. Like if you want to build an Apple II computer, how to do that. This is a much longer piece on where to get software for the Apple II.
Nice.
And what are some things they recommend trying, including like these FTP sites that, I mean, I remember one of the FTP site they mentioned on here, like I remember connecting to that in like 1996.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
To get Apple ROMs.
FTP.asmoth is, or whatever it is, just Asmoth FTP is like very well known.
Yeah. It's been around forever. I don't know who pays for it. Like, it's just amazing. So that's still up. I haven't really tried.
At this point, you could just have a Raspberry Pi and just have something port forwarded through your firewall at home and have a pretty significant FTP site.
Well, this came up at work for me recently that I guess on Amazon Amazon, you can create like a virtual machine that acts as it's like a fake SFTP server that is wrapping Amazon S3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's just an FTP server, but behind the scenes, it's S3 storage. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I've done something like that before. So it's pretty much infinite storage at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. It's super cheap. It's way cheaper than you think. Okay. So enough about that. there's a ton, but also it's like all the technical manuals, like which YouTube stations are the best. I like this. It's just a good reference, man. This is like a thing you should bookmark if you're interested in getting to Apple II.
Yeah, even if you're just interested in emulating, like you don't have to have an Apple II.
Mm-hmm.
And what do we got next? Is this yours too?
Yeah. So for whatever reason, the New York Times posted, this is about how I posted this because it's about how stuff like Raspberry Pi is getting more and more mainstream. So the New York Times, which normally doesn't cover a lot of tech stuff as far as I know, now has a feature on how to set up a retro console using Raspberry Pi.
Nice.
There, you won't learn anything in here. This is really like a beginner's guide. Nothing too like exciting here. But it's just cool how this is now a thing like a real newspaper is talking about.
Yeah, we're pretty much at the point where your grandma will reference a Raspberry Pi to you. You know, maybe they're not cool anymore at this point. They've crossed the threshold. This is a video. The next article is a video on YouTube that is a topic that we talked about maybe 2 episodes ago, I think.
Yeah, using the DS to scoop fries, right?
Yes, the 10-year hunt for a lost McDonald's DS game. And it's actually a really cool video. This guy, Nick Robinson, was on a quest to get this DS game, and he finally found one on Japan Yahoo auctions, but he had to use his site because they won't ship to America, that will kind of buy it for you and pack stuff up for you. And then it just goes into all this crazy stuff because his brother was going to bring it home from Japan, and then COVID happened, and then he had to find someone to hack the Wii because of some code that you have to type in that he couldn't find anywhere.
Hmm. Hackers could figure, could reverse engineer that, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, so he found a hacker that could, you know, one of the few that he knew about, but the guy retired from that stuff, and he talked him into it just for this one last hack, and yeah, they got in, and it's fun to watch the video and what you do and all the music, and it looks like they put a lot of work into this weird cartridge, but I don't know how fun it would be to have. It's just, I guess if you're a collector, it's something to put on your shelf.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent a lot of money on it too, by the way.
Yeah, that's it. It's a super, super rare system.
Yeah.
That's the point in having it.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't collect for that. I just collect for stuff that I liked before or think I'll like now. Not just because something's rare, you know? If you bought a Game & Watch, the new Nintendo Game & Watch, now you can kind of run Doom on it. Kinda. So,
okay.
They hacked Doom, and this is on Hackaday.com. They hacked the Game & Watch, and they had to hack mm-hmm. Doom also because the Game & Watch only has 1.3 megabytes of storage, and Doom is about 8 meg. So they took out most of the textures, and yeah. But it works.
Well, yeah, I mean, but Doom is 8 meg for sure, but the 32X version, and certainly the Super Nintendo version of Doom, were much smaller than that.
Yeah, yeah, but they're definitely... Well, I wonder how big the Super Nintendo version would be.
Well, hold on. Dr. Mario, Doom. It is 2.1 meg.
Oh, okay. So, that's where all the textures are going. It's an extra megabyte.
Yeah, or you could take out the music, probably, and cut it down quite a bit.
Yeah, yeah. But I think this is just some kind of ROM swapping as well, to kind of get a little bit more in there, maybe. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It was about a week ago where I watched this video, but pretty neat.
Mm-hmm. Well, this is just, you know, if a thing has a screen, someone is running Doom on it.
Yes, and sometimes even when it doesn't. Like, trying to...
I would think the lack of buttons is the real problem with that.
Yeah.
I guess
yeah.
You could maybe port the Game Boy Advance version to run on it.
Oh, yeah, I guess I didn't look what port they used. Something that would run on an ARM processor.
Yeah, so they probably use like a you know, Chocolate Doom, something where they had the source and they could make these changes really quickly.
Yeah, yeah.
3DO Doom, the source is out there if you want to try that one.
Yeah, there's no shortage of Doom ports and open source ones at that. The next story is our stupidest story of the week, possibly, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Some chump bought a box copy of Super Mario Brothers 3 for $156,000. So,
yep.
There's that. This yep. is not going to go up in value.
No. I think they also said it's a rare version because it's like a first run version of Super Mario 3. I don't believe they made any changes to the game, but there are different production runs because it was the highest selling game of the 80s or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
No, in America it was the highest selling game of the 90s. I'm sorry.
So what, did it have a different box after a while or what?
No, I think it's probably a very subtle production difference that only really obsessive nerds would know.
Well, this is the right podcast for that, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't. I don't spend a lot of time thinking about like box variants.
No.
So.
No. I don't even collect boxes. I just have the cards. Next, we have on NintendoEverything.com just a quick article, some quotes from Miyamoto recently about from The Guardian about why he didn't have Luigi as a playable character in Super Mario 64. Pretty much, it was new hardware, and they were just, it was like staring at the sun, and they were just like, please, no, let's just have Mario. Mm-hmm. That's really the short of it. So, not much more to say about
that. The short answer is they didn't have time to do it.
Yes. Yeah. But I only read the snippets from this article. I didn't go to The Guardian or anything. I don't know if you have to pay for that site to get to it.
No, The Guardian's free. I mean, okay. They run a lot of it. The Guardian has a lot of stuff encouraging you to give them money.
Mm.
But I don't think they don't have an actual paywall, or maybe like Pi Hole blocks their paywall for me.
Oh, yeah. Pac-Man to be inducted in the Comic-Con Museum Character Hall of Fame, something mm-hmm. I did not know existed until just now.
Mm-hmm. Neither did I. And it's kind of weird because Pac-Man as a character has no personality.
He does, and I mean...
In the cartoon?
In the cartoon, and also, have you ever played the Ghostly Adventures games? Those are really good.
No, no.
I think you would really like those. I would actually say those games are fantastic. Especially the second one.
Yeah, I've heard they're good. I probably would like it. I have a huge backlog. I haven't gotten around to those yet.
Yeah, yeah. And but still, it's not like these guys at Comic-Con are saying like, well, in the cartoon he had a personality. He's just a memorable character. Right. Like people just know who he is, so I guess he got in.
And his personality in the cartoon is basically Popeye.
Kinda. Yeah. But not the games. The games, the later games, these, I don't know how to describe them.
Like Pac-Man RPG, that one?
The Ghostly Adventures one. He's kind of teenager-y, upbeat, upgoing. What else? Oh, more Pac-Man articles.
I was actually looking at this article I wrote about this Pac-Man sampler CD I bought, literally in India.
Mm-hmm.
To see if there are any Pac-Man games on there where he has a personality. There was like one RPG, but when I looked at it, there was like no actual Pac-Man content in the RPG. And then I took a count. It's basically an article where I review the games on this CD that again I bought in India, and how many viruses were installed after running the games.
Yeah.
And the answer was 10. 10 viruses.
That's awesome. Yeah, you have to like boot it in a VM, in a virtual machine to isolate it.
Yeah, I ran it in a VM for sure. It was a CD sampler called The Return of Mario and Pac-Man.
Oh, because they go hand in hand.
Yeah, of course. And it's a bunch of just terrible homebrew demos. I mean, I've written a terrible homebrew game, don't get me wrong. These are even worse. And I was expecting at least ROMs of like Mario and Pac-Man on here, but that's not the case.
Nice. Put that in the show notes. We should link that article.
I will add it right now. Give me a minute.
The MIT Press Reader, How Pac-Man Revolutionized Gaming. And the short of this article, which is not a bad article, is that it had really good collision detection for not only the walls, because everything like Pong literally could be called collision detection, the game. And if somehow there's some listener that doesn't know what collision detection is who listens to a nerdy podcast like this, it's just the code that detects when two things in a video game touch each other, like in Street Fighter when you land a punch, or in Pac-Man when you run into a wall or something. And this is talking about mostly when you're gobbling up the little pellets and how it turned collision detection into a different type of action. And you know, history's kind of made there, and that's what set it apart. But I'm not really giving this article justice. I'm not describing it well enough. So I definitely think our readers should check this one out. Sorry, our listeners should check this one out.
Unearthed Green Lantern game for the Super Nintendo. So this is an unreleased game, and someone posted footage of this game being played now. The video's 20 minutes, but there's only like a minute or two of actual footage. The game seems extremely unfinished.
Yeah. And it was by Ocean. And apparently a whole team or a few people were working on this, and they just kept getting diverted. And then eventually they were told to work on 3D games, and one guy still wanted to finish it. And so he had to, some guy, I think the original person left and took his code with him. So he had to kind of start over, but he still had all the assets. And this is how far he got. So this is the remnants of that. And it doesn't look bad for how much is done. Also, it's Green Lantern. Does anyone care about the Green Lantern? Did anyone ever care about the Green Lantern?
Well, this was that era in the 90s when comic books were having a real big resurgence. So maybe at that time period, Green Lantern was a pretty good idea. You know, this is around like Death of Superman time.
Yeah. All right.
See, Windows turns 35.
Cool little history on the Verge.com. Did you ever watch the video that's linked in this of someone starting at Windows 1.0 and upgrading all the way to Windows 10?
I've seen that before, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a good example of how everything continues to work. You know, Microsoft puts a lot of effort into backwards compatibility. So, yeah, of course, this is going to work. You can do that.
Yeah.
I don't know who in the time of Windows, you know, Windows 3.1 owned a computer that would be capable of running Windows 10 today.
No.
But assuming you kept the same hard drive and just upgraded like the PC around it constantly, even then the biggest hard drive. Yeah, you couldn't get a hard drive big enough to install Windows 10. So
No. But yeah, it's a nice walk down memory lane. I started with Windows 3.11 for work groups.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 35. Zach posted this article from RetroRGB. The Xbox Series X and S. It's the worst name.
Wait, just those are different worst things? There's two different Xboxes? No, this is a serious question.
Yes. Well, anyway, if you buy one of those new, I'm just going to call it the new Xbox. The new Xbox is.
Wait, what's the difference again? Like one has a disc drive, the other doesn't. So is it like what PlayStation's doing?
It's a little bit different. Where the Xbox Series S is the cheaper one. So not only is it, I'm using air quotes, digital only. It doesn't have a disc drive, but it's also less powerful. But every game is totally compatible. And really, the only thing you don't get is 4K and ray tracing. Apparently, the games play great on it. And I've never owned an Xbox. I'm not sticking up for it or anything. But I heard they're, pretty... I heard Xbox is doing a pretty good job this time.
I'm not sure I've ever played an Xbox. That's serious. I don't think I have.
I think right when one came out, and this is when I was like a big Microsoft hater, I played one once and I was just like, I don't want anything to do with this. But yeah, I heard these are pretty good, especially for the Xbox Game Pass. I heard that's an amazing deal. But this article points out that they just left dev mode in the new Xboxes. So you could just turn on dev mode and sideload RetroArch, and it can actually play Dreamcast and Wii games. It could emulate them really well. So And even the he's testing on the S, so the cheaper one. So for $299, you could get a modern console that can emulate all the games you want, and you could just put all the games on a USB drive and plug it right in the back. So I think that's pretty cool. And you know what this also helped murder is the Atari box. The only reason anyone would ever buy an Atari box would be to do this exact same thing. And now you can actually... I assume
even the cheap Xbox, whichever one it was.
Yeah, the S.
Sure. Whichever one it was. I'm sure that's 100 times more powerful than the Atari box PC. What is it called again?
Atari VCS. The VCS. Yeah, yeah. Even though there was already a system called the VCS. Just, we're talking about the two consoles right now that have the stupidest names. But, yeah. So, there you go. I hope, if any of our listeners does this, if any of you have an Xbox Series S or X, or if there's any we don't know about, please let us know how emulation works on it.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite article of the week. Did you watch this video?
I did not.
It's the Sega VR revived, emulating an unreleased Genesis accessory. And so a lot of people don't realize that Genesis was, or Sega was going to have VR for the Genesis. And this guy ported it to the HTC Vive, which is a modern VR headset. And it works really well. You're in VR in 16-bit, but it looks fun. It looks cool. It looks like it tracks well. And the game doesn't look great, but it just looks good and it looks like it works well. So maybe this will inspire some people to create some new Genesis VR games.
I guess I technically could, but I'm not going to.
I mean, you can make your mall game into a VR experience.
Yeah, that's really something I wanted to do.
With all the time you have, that's what you could do. I go back to my original,
when I started doing Sega Genesis development, my first idea was a game that I called Iowa Driving Simulator, which was going to be a little bit like Desert Bus, but it was a real-time drive through the state of Iowa with scenery that matches the actual scenery as much as possible.
And the goal is just to stay awake.
Somehow that changed into a completely different game. But it was going to be overhead. I was going to do like an overhead view, like kind of bump and jump style game.
Nice. Nice. Where nothing's happening. There's no bumping or jumping.
Yeah, there'll be other cars here and there.
Maybe a tractor.
Yeah, yeah. And then, different seasons, just like bump and jump.
Yes,
There's corn season and there's winter.
What other Sega news do we have? Lots of Sega stuff.
Yeah, a lot of Sega stuff. So a game... by Falcom, Lord Monarch finally got a fan translation. This is, even though it's a Falcom game, this is really more like a real-time strategy game. It's not an RPG. It graphically looks like an RPG, but it really isn't. This has never been translated at all. I mean, it has like PC version, Super Nintendo version, and of course Mega Drive version. None of them have ever had an English translation, official or otherwise. But here, this group, it's three or four programmers involved, finally did the Genesis translation.
I've never heard of this. Looking.
Games released, like Falcom games released in the late 90s or mid-90s, really. This is sort of mid-90s. Like, no one was talking about them. You know, it's not like you could grab a copy of EGM and there'd be a write-up of Lord Monarch.
Yeah.
So you'd have to know about it much, much later.
Sorry if you already said this. Is this turn-based?
It's a real-time strategy game. It's not really an RPG.
Oh, cool.
So it's maybe... I don't know if it's like Ogre Battle, but that would be something it's closer to.
I'm going to go ahead and click download on this.
Yeah, it's just the patch. You still have to go get the ROM. I understand that the ROM may be available on archive.org, so I've heard.
Nice.
And yeah, it's just a kind of a different style game. There's probably a sequel that's only in Japan. If you like East and you like Legend of Heroes, it's not a guarantee you're going to like this game just because it's by the same developer.
Yeah.
Because it really is a different genre. This is one Falcon game I've never really like looked into playing because I'm not big in RTS games. That said, I'm almost certainly going to be trying this demo.
Yeah, me too.
Demo this translation, sorry.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to try this. And Sega wants to release more Atlas ports, remasters, and remakes. So it's the people that do Persona, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, if they did like Persona 4 and 5 on the Switch, they would make a bajillion dollars.
I know, they really would. They really would.
It would just be printing money. Like Persona 5 is a pretty, might be a tough game to run on the Switch. I don't know. Like, it's not super graphically intensive. I don't think maybe... I guess it would be okay. I guess you could run it just fine. It has a lot of voice. I mean, it's a large game.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had to uninstall it to install another PlayStation. I keep running out of storage on my PlayStation 4. So it's a very large game. But really, yeah, if you put Persona 4 was like a Vita-only game. It was recently released on PC. People that like Persona 4 really like it. And if they put that on Switch... Everybody who has Persona 4 on Vita would buy it. And I don't mean like 80%, I mean like literally everyone.
Yeah.
And people who just had only played Persona 5 would probably go back and get it. Like, this is to be one of the many projects that, like, this is literally free money if they're willing to go take it.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then some Dreamcast news, the untold story of the bug that almost sank the Dreamcast North American launch.
Yeah, this is the audio driver problem. We might have mentioned this before, but yeah, some number of Dreamcast units along with a specific build of a couple of games would cause the system to crash due to a difference in the audio hardware that the audio driver wasn't expecting, and the audio driver didn't have graceful error handling and would just crash the whole system.
Yeah, the MIDI chips, the MIDI chip wasn't grounded for some reason. could you just imagine being the person that said, well, we don't need that one extra pin and causing this big mess.
Yeah.
Wow. So did they catch it? Or did some of these get released in the wild and they...
Well, some of them got released and they didn't patch the Dreamcast. They updated the games.
Mm-hmm.
So you could bring the game back. Because your Dreamcast, other games would run just fine. Mm-hmm. So you'd bring the game back to GameStop or I guess it was Elbow at the time. And they would just swap it out for you.
Wow. Yeah.
See, and then almost done with Dreamcast news here. Metal Slug 6 arcade ported to Dreamcast.
Yep, there you go. That's the story.
All right. And Neo Geo Battle Coliseum and Samurai Showdown 6 also ported to Dreamcast. Are these official? Yeah. They can't be, right?
Well, the last one, Metal Slug, was from Naomi, which is more beefier. Like, that's the arcade version of a Dreamcast, arcade hardware of a Dreamcast. This is, and most of those can just play on Dreamcast. And this is a Thomas Wave, which is also an even beefier version of a Dreamcast. So, I don't know if that answers your question.
No, I was asking if they were official, like, are these licensed ports or fan ports?
Oh, no, I think these are licensed.
Okay.
No, I think you're right that they are not official. But what is Battle Coliseum. I don't know if I've played that one.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that one.
I am going to leave that in my Google history to look up later. And that is news, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep, that is news.
And we got some Game Club. Like mine is up there. I guess I'll go. So I had a fantastic time playing 4D sports boxing this week. So this is a game that was developed by Distinctive Software, who also did, what else did they do? A lot of stuff. They did like the Captain America and Avengers game. They did Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, Paperboy for NES, Sim Life, Terminator, just a bunch of NES ports. But this is for DOS, Amiga, Atari, Macintosh, FM Towns. I played it for DOS, and I just installed it on DOSBox. We talked about DOSBox a lot last episode. And I must have had a bootleg copy when I was young, because I don't remember there being copy protection. But this has the kind of copy protection where it asks you to open up to a page of the manual, and it says, like, you know, the third row, the seventh word, you know, type it in here. And it took me forever to find a manual online, but I did, and it worked. And so you create, this is like a early 3D polygonal game, boxing game. You create your boxer, you know, you have like three or four faces and some body types, and, you know, you can change how tall and wide your person is, and give them a name. And then you try to get all the way to the champ. And every time after a round, you get to go to the gym and kind of select. It's almost like Dark Souls, like, where you select your new stats you get from working at the gym, like more strength, more agility, more stamina, that kind of thing. And I, at first, almost always just go for strength. So I'm just like punching people a few times and they're knocked down. But it does kind of backfire after a while. I got into the low 30s then. Just ran out of time, but I like this game as much as I remember it, and it takes a while to get used to the controls. Use the number pad to move around and, you know, left hook and punch high, punch low, and I think it's really impressive for when it was released. I had fun playing it now. I think it'd be cool, you know, if they did, someone did like a remake, kind of an updated version of this. And there are two versions of this, and it actually says version 2 on the second one. And the only thing that's really different is that it has better audio. And that's the one I played, and it just has really good Sound Blaster and AdLib support. Just really, really impressive for the time. And yeah, did you get a chance to play it at all?
No, I did not. I don't really need to play it on. I guess I could play it in DOSBox or whatever, but I did not.
Yeah, it's a bit of a project to install.
Yeah, I know I've seen it at some point. I just, I don't really care for the graphics on this thing.
What's really strange, you can pick your viewpoint. So you could click on the camera and it has like the third person perspective. Uh-huh. And then you could pick from your point of view, where you're like face to face with the opponent, or their point of view. And yeah, pretty funny, pretty cool stuff. And I don't blame you though. This game is not everyone's cup of tea. And also, installing anything in DOSBox unless you're doing it often or already have it installed, not the easiest thing. But yeah, let's jump to your game.
So I went with Super Pac-Man, game that I, it's one of my favorite arcade cabinets. I think I like the cabinet better than the game itself. it's a kind of odd version of Pac-Man. I guess it's sort of maybe loosely based on Pac and Pal. But the premise is, instead of eating dots, Pac-Man is on a board with various foods, you know, sometimes healthy foods, sometimes, you know, junk food. And I guess sometimes things you would choke to death on if you tried to eat them in real life. and the idea is that the food is behind different walls, and then there's keys to open up the walls, or I guess open the doors to the walls, and two different kinds of power-ups. You have the four power-ups that turn the ghost blue for a minute so you can eat them, and then the super power-ups, which give you the ability for a few seconds to pass through ghosts and eat doors. So instead of getting the keys to the doors, you can just eat the doors. And the keys, you know, the first two levels, like, the keys open up doors that are near the key, and as you get to further levels, the distance between the key and the door is a little more random. But the board layout never changes. So I played it and really, you know, kind of remembered that it's a very easy game by Pac-Man standards.
Mm-hmm.
Because the level's always the same, and it's pretty much always the same pattern to get through the level. So if you watch a speed run, which is like completing all 20 stages or whatever, whatever the definition of speed run is for Super Pac-Man, it's literally the exact same pattern every single time. So there's not a lot of variety. So like,
yeah.
I like the artwork of the game. You know, I like the power-ups look cool. And I sort of like the premise of having different kinds of power-ups. But it's pretty shallow. There's really not that much content in the game.
Mm-hmm. It seems like a step backwards from Ms. Pac-Man.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no doubt. No doubt.
It's not bad. But yeah, I read that he gets bigger because he's supposed to be in the air, like Superman, like he's flying.
Oh, but that doesn't seem right. Over the doors, but when you play,
and that's why. Yeah, and then that's why the ghosts also look different. They look squashed when he's big.
I guess that explains the artwork on the cabinet then.
I mean, kind of. It's still far fetched, but yeah. Yeah, so, huh. Yeah, I'm looking at the cab now. That is kind of a nice looking cab.
Yeah, it's a very, very 80s cabinet. Like,
now, is this ported to many things?
No, not really. It had ports for the Commodore 64. There's a PC port. Some computer called the Sword M5. I have no clue what that even is.
Never heard of that.
It was sold in the United Kingdom and was reasonably popular in Czechoslovakia. All right. Any listeners who currently live in the Czech Republic or Slovakia that would like to tell us about the Sword M5?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So there's a C60. They mentioned C64. That's on there too.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was an easy game to play though. What do you think you're going to play next?
I am going to, I feel like playing something kind of lighthearted and goofy. So I'm going to go with Super Monkey Ball.
Nice.
And there's several variants. I don't really care which version you play.
Cool.
What about you?
Are you going to tell us which one you're going to play, or are you going to wait till next time to tell us?
I'm going to play the GameCube version.
Okay.
Almost certainly the GameCube version.
I'm going to do Tron Deadly Discs.
All right.
2600, or
whatever. Yeah, the television version's a lot better.
Yeah. I just don't have it in television. I don't know how well it would emulate.
Well, I have the original cart and in Intellivision, so. Oh, that's probably, nice. Is that on the I don't know if that's on the Intellivision flashback because it's Tron licensed, it might not be.
Yeah. All right. If any of our listeners play any of these games, just want to email us about any kind of other retro thing they have going on, some projects, other games they're playing, recommendation, news items, whatever, just want to say hi. Email at retrogameclub.net. That is email at retrogameclub.net. And we have Facebook too, facebook.retrogameclub.net, and Twitter, RGC Podcast. That's at RGC Podcast. And Zach takes care of all our social media. And we got some emails.
Yeah. I will. Where am I? Oh no, I have too many tabs open. I'll get it here. We got a couple. Yeah, I'll give one for Majors first. Talking about the PowerBase converter in EverDrive. You mentioned that you do not have a PVC since you own an EverDrive. So you got a PowerBase converter through a Sega promotion when the Genesis launched. It was something like buy three Sega Master System games, get a free PowerBase converter. Oh, cool. I remember this promotion, and I think you could get it buying Genesis games. It was some weird. It could be different by region, but I seem to recall you would send in like barcodes from like Genesis stuff, and then you could get a PowerBase converter. Anyways, he said he already had a Master System, but figured free is free. So he sent away for it and started using it as his main way to play Master System titles on the Genesis. A few years ago, he got interested in the FM sound on the Master System and saw that there was a new converter that supported FM being released by DB Electronics. So apparently it's a pretty good audio difference. And the Mega EverDrive Pro also supports FM on the Sega Master System. Moms in the 80s telling their kids to not sit so close to the TV. Is that something we talked about?
Yeah, I think when I was talking about VR, and now we just put TVs on our faces.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Something about... All right. all right. So, I lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
This one has my train. It happens. Stuff. That's why we can.
Oh yeah,
edit.
I said video games certainly did not help with that battle. Of course not, especially when the households only had a 13-inch TV.
Yeah, that's what I had.
Oh wow. Yeah, yeah. I had one of my college apartment. I had a 13-inch TV in my college apartment. Let's see here. The Raspberry Pi plus keyboard project. Assuming I can ever buy one of those retail, right? I mentioned using it to make a dedicated Apple EMU, but he thought an MSX or the Sega SC3000 would also be good candidates. The SC3000 is like a Z80 computer released by Sega. So it's sort of Master System grade games. Probably could learn to do Z80 development, maybe. I don't know. Absolute TurboGrafx duds. So I mentioned that there weren't a lot of just really horrible games on the PC Engine. Says he can only think of two: Gunboat and Falcon.
Oh yeah, Falcon is bad.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. I don't know if I played Gunboat. I think I looked at it and said that's not the type of game I'd like anyways. Other games with level selection screen, of course, wants to give a shout out to Lords of Thunder. As for the games of the episode, Castle of Illusion. So it's a game he fondly remembers. At the time, you know, he thought he was too old for games with cuter, childish graphics. But even so, he managed to secretly enjoy it. And we had a social media question about unlimited money in space. What would you buy? He would want some specialized cabs like Outrun 2. Or Tron. I don't know if he means Tron or your game, Tron Deadly Discs. It's not Tron Deadly Discs. What is it called in the arcade? Discs of Tron.
Discs of Tron, yeah.
Yeah, which is an awesome cabinet.
I do have an original Tron cab. It's my second favorite possession behind my Star Wars cab.
He almost bought a Tron cabinet for $250, but when he got to the seller's house, the seller upped the price to $350.
Yes, that'll happen.
Really? Yeah, And are we getting any next-gen consoles? I guess we asked that too. And he said no. Instead, he is hunting for Gacken TV Boy carts from 1983.
Wow. I was going to say, I think we need some pictures of Major's collection. Yeah. So you mentioned some stuff, some random stuff he hunts down. I just need to see it. Well, cool. I think that's all of Major's email. Thanks for emailing. And we have Mark emails. He wrote in last week about a main cab that he created. And we asked to see some more pictures of it. And so he wrote us again. and thanked us for the mention, but he built it with Raspberry Pi 4 connected to a gaming monitor, which has built-in speakers powered by, it looks like a laptop battery, a power bank. I guess that would be a battery, right? Power, or is it just, and And
I really like, I'm looking at this cabinet that he built. The color scheme is amazing.
It's like black fantastic. And
I would say neon green. I don't know what shade of green I would call that, but it's really bright. So you can, I mean, it's like, it's a thing you could like see in the dark.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's really, really nice marquee that lights up with LED lights. The buttons and joystick are wired to a USB encoder. And it just looks really, really nice. And might need to build something like that soon. He does say that he is a big fan of the Rocky movies, and that explains his love for 40 sports boxing. He's played it again this week, and he got rank 7, which is actually really good. I mean, the game gets hard to, you know, much sooner than that. And but then his boxer got too old and had to retire. And he beat the champ.
Like Rocky on the Sega Master System. That's the real test.
Oh, that should be a game called Game Sometime.
No, it should not. No. Have you actually played it?
No, I've only seen video of that one.
Yeah, it looks really nice. Like, it is graphically a great, great, great game. Mm-hmm. Like, oh man, is that game unbearable to play? Watch the Angry Video Game Nerd review first.
I will.
And then tell me if you want to make it a gameplay game.
But he says that if you get to the champ, what you have to do is just punch him twice and just keep running away from him. And then you win by decision. It takes 15 rounds, which I didn't know. Like, I just always played it with 3 rounds. But I don't know if with the champ, you don't have that option. But he played Super Pac-Man 2. And his wife and kids really enjoyed it. And Ms. Pac-Man is still the best version. So, all right. Thank you guys for those emails. We do have some social media here, too. Same question you said before about unlimited money and space. And what are some of these answers? Well, I'll just do mine first because I threw mine in there. But if I had unlimited money, I definitely would love a Stun Runner cabinet. I love that game. In fact, I was going to pick that this week as a Game Club game, but you can't get that. It's on a Midway Classics collection, but even though it was released for Windows in 2006, it's not available on Steam. So I have no way to play it right now other than MAME, and I don't know how well it'll work, so. Maybe another time, but a Disruptron cabinet, a 720 cabinet, or one of those Star Wars pods, like the one that came out in like 2015 or something. What did other people say here? Someone else says Space Harrier or Disruptron, those big Lost World Jurassic Park games, the Ocean Hunter, Heavyweight Champ, and House of Dead. House of Dead would be a good one. In fact, 1UP should really make a House of Dead game. I think that would sell really good.
I think so too. Yeah. I do like, you mentioned Disruptron getting a shout out. That is such a beautiful cabinet.
It really is. And also none of the ports do it justice. Like the arcade original is just the best. You know, version of that game. Robert calls out that he loved 4D boxing on his 386, which I did too. My 386 SX16 Magnavox Head Start. And I think that's about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I can give a shot. My own pick would be like Dragon's Lair would be a really good one. That's the Dragon's Space Lair. this is an awesome looking cabinet. I've always liked that cabinet a lot. Maybe something crazy like Mach 3. That was kind of a crazy cabinet.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably high maintenance. I bet you that's really, really hard to fix if anything goes wrong.
Yeah. I mean, even those Paperboy control or the Paperboy bike handles, those sell for so much on eBay now. All that stuff is becoming harder and harder to find. So, yeah, any moving part on an arcade cab is not cheap and breaks a lot.
Yeah, Paperboy, yeah. If I liked the arcade version of Paperboy more, right? I like the NES version of Paperboy.
Mm-hmm.
But the arcade version, I just don't like the controls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. All right. I think that does it for this one.
Yeah, a little bit short, but that's all right. Unless you want to talk about your Thanksgiving plans.
No, they're boring. And sometimes short is fine.
Yeah. So hopefully everyone has a good holiday. Hopefully you're not going anywhere. Or if you are, you're being smart about it.
Stay home and play games. And, well, I guess I'll mention one thing. On YouTube and on Twitch, Mystery Science Theater is doing their, on Comedy Central, they used to have a 24-hour marathon on Thanksgiving, and they're doing that again on Twitch and YouTube. So I think everyone should check that out.
You realize there's a Pluto TV station that just plays Mystery Science Theater 3,000 24 hours a day, right?
Yeah. But, okay. You know, I think they're going to do some special stuff for this. I hope they do. But
all right.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. So thanks for listening.
Yeah, thank you.